So most of you know that I spend as many Thursdays as I can in Miss Callahan's third grade class as they teach me third grade math. And now, to be honest, my arrival on Thursdays is not good for educational continuity, all right? Because immediately what happens is like sprinkler heads, they pop up and they come running and I get hugged and it's just amazing. It's just a few minutes of chaos and I'm sure it's not helpful to Miss Callahan in that moment. It is the one place, I can tell you, the one place in all the world that I truly feel unconditionally loved. And it may simply be because they can't email me, but I still feel loved, right? So last spring on this particular day, we were doing the hug thing and it was going great. And a little girl who I had known in the class, it just came up, she gave me a really big hug and she just kind of hung on for a little bit longer. I mean, just kind of lingered in that hug and just in that moment where you recognize that something's just not right with her spirit. And so I remember looking down, and I remember taking her little face in my hands and just looking at her and asking her if she was okay. And she said, "Mr. Corky, some days you just need a good hug. Some days you just need a good hug." I believe this is universally true. Some days we all just need a good hug. That's what today's going to be about, recognize and distributing affection. For the last few weeks, we've been talking about what it looks like to be the church that does life together. Not what it looks like to be attendees or members or visitors, but what it actually looks like when we commit, as the early Acts 2 church did, to do life together. We've been saying that in the church, when everyone is welcome and everything is shared, that joy abounds, real joy. And I believe this joy leads to visible, tangible, spirit-filled, evidence-based affection. Jesus comes on the scene in the first century and he gives his followers a new command. He actually rolls all the Old Testament commands into one when he says, "We are to love one another. As I have loved you," he said, "so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. That is, if you love one another." This means we are to love like Christ. And how did he love? He loved sacrificially and he reached out and he touched others. And this love was so tangible and recognizable to everyone who saw it. They immediately knew something was different than what they previously knew. That the paradigm had shifted, had changed. And he said, "We must do this if we are his disciples." It's a requirement. It is a divine mandate that our love should be visible. Our affection should be more than warm feelings or platitude prayers. It means that when people encounter us, our affection for them should be crystal clear. Let me sum it up this way. If we fail to love what God says he loves, there's a pretty good chance that God's love is not in us. All right, I'm going to say that again. It's a theological mouthful. If we fail to love what God says he loves, then there's a good chance that God's love is not in us. The hard part, I believe, is that we live in a world where love is both conditional and circumstantial. We live in a world where love sometimes is hard to trust. But this should never cause us to cease being these vessels of unending love that just is poured out from us. Now, to be honest with you this morning, just to be completely transparent as I put in the hook, this has been one of the hardest sermons that I've ever had to write. Not because I don't believe in visible affection, not because there's not enough biblical evidence for tangible affection in the kingdom, nor because there isn't a huge need in this world for healthy, positive expressions of love. It was hard because we live in a world that now is culturally distorted, twisted, maligned, abused, and sexualized affection to the point that no one feels safe. It's splashed all over the headlines. Every news chain and news feed these days has it. There is a new revelation of abuse that surfaces every day. The ongoing sexual objectification of women and children and even men has made it so that no one is immune from this distortion of power. Quite frankly, it's disgusting. It should make us sick that people use their power and their influence to distort something that was intended to be beautiful. So it's hard. You need to know that it's hard to stand up here today, even with the volume of biblical evidence for tangible and visible affection, without being somewhat tainted and stained by the abusive sins of others. And I can't even say this morning without impunity that the church throughout history has not also been a contributor to this distortion of holy affection. The fact is that physical touch has become very complicated because this beautiful gift that God has given us to meet the hardwired desires of our souls, to be comforted, to be loved, to feel secure, has been so twisted. Genuine biblical affection has now become guilt by association with perversion. It's become guilt by association. The truth is I believe we live in a world that is desperately in need of genuine and healthy affection. I believe people need the assurance of love that comes when someone reaches out to them and touches them and hugs them and encounters them. Listen, if you've been around me any time at all, you know that I am a hugger. And I am consistently telling people that I love them. And here's the deal. I really mean that. I mean, I actually mean that. When I tell you that I love you, I actually mean that I love you. I think it's one of the pitfalls of Methodism is that itinerancy, the moving of pastors, causes pastors not to love their people. You know, I've just got to be here a few years. Why would I love you? Why would I engage in life with you? Why would I get close to you? Because I'm only going to be here a few years. I don't want to get too close. I don't want to get personal, right? I mean, it's a pitfall of Methodism. This is why in 14 years here that we're doing life together. This is what we want to do. Not, you just got to know that when I say I love you enough to tell you that I love you, and I love you enough to tell you a hard truth when you need to hear a hard truth. You see, I believe we're in this thing together. I believe we need each other. Now, the Apostle Paul paints a picture of what I believe this affection in action looks like. So go to Romans chapter 12. We're going to look at a number of other passages this morning, but I'm just going to go to those. This one we should look at together because you're going to want to underline it in your Bible. It's okay to write in your Bible. You know that. It's okay. Right? God said so somewhere. Verse 9, chapter 12, book of Romans. Paul says, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keeping your spiritual fervor. Serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Everybody wishes that the passage just stopped there. Then it says, Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. It gets a little tougher. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. This is affection in action. When you look at this passage, you hear all kinds of action words. Love must be sincere. Love must be devoted to one another. Love honors one another. Love never lacks zeal. In other words, it's never short of enthusiasm. Love is joyful. It's hopeful. It's patient. It's consistent. Love shares the good and bad. Love is never conceited. And finally, love can lead to peace. Imagine that. Peace, if you choose it. In my opinion, just my opinion, this is what visible affection looks like. I would argue that our greeting time and the time that you gather as we come into this church is the single most important thing we do. I think it's far more important than what's happening right now, and I think that's a pretty important deal. It's probably on the equal plane with prayer. But it might be, in my opinion, the single most important thing we do each Sunday, because it's a moment to look someone else in the eye, take their hand, and express kindness to them. It's a moment where there is no separation between strangers and friends. They all receive a warm greeting, or should. We see Jesus model this kind of affection all over the place. He washed feet. He healed people by actually touching them. There was one story where he even took some dirt off the ground, spit in his hand, made some mud. I mean, that was kind of a gross healing, but man, he placed his hands right there with a little spittle and mud, and it was kind of crazy. He wept with people. He had compassion on people. He fed people. We see affection when he meets the woman at the well, and he changes her life, and he did not condemn her checkered past. We see affection with the woman caught in adultery, a foreshadowing of Jesus' intervention into sin that would save her life and our lives as well. We see affection when he goes to Zacchaeus' house for dinner. We see affection when he invites Matthew, a hated tax collector, to be a disciple. We see affection when he heals a paralytic. We see affection on the cross when he forgives the thief hanging next to him. And the last thing he does is place the care of his earthly mother in the hands of the beloved disciple John. We could do 13 weeks on Jesus' examples of affection alone, right? The question is, can we put them into practice? Can we recognize brokenness in the world and love it anyway? So I want to share a couple of stories this morning. Back in the early days around here, I greeted everyone after every service. Some of you have been around here long enough to remember that. I loved it then, and I miss doing it now. But I'm trying to honor parking ministry out there where there is no parking. And I'm trying to honor Kelly and her Sunday school volunteers. And, you know, some of those folks love your children, but they'd love for you to come get them. And so, and I know that if I greet that I can single-handedly bottleneck the whole thing up. I just know that's possible. But years ago, I did that every Sunday after every service. But while I was doing that years ago, I was greeting people. A woman is passing through the line, and she comes up, and I didn't recognize her. And back then, we were kind of in a place where I kind of knew who everybody was. And I did what I normally do. I gave her a big hug and thanked her for being there. And in that process, I could tell she begins to cry. I mean, you could just kind of feel her begin to weep a little bit. And of course, you know, that's hardly the moment to try to unpack that, right? You know, because you can kind of feel the pressure. Everybody feels the pressure of that line backing up behind you, you know, and you kind of know that. So I didn't know what was going on. And so in an awkward moment, it's an awkward moment for sure. And I told her, I whispered in her ear, I said, whatever's going on, know that I'll be praying for you. And if I can do anything, just give me a call. So she called on Monday morning. She began to apologize for her emotional breakdown. And you know, of course, I was like, no, that's what we do. And here's what she said. I've remembered it all these years. She says, I have been single all my life. I am an only child, and my parents passed away many years ago. And I realized yesterday as you hugged me, a total stranger, me, someone you did not know, just how long it's been since someone actually hugged me and made me feel like I mattered. Some days, there are people around us who just need a good hug. I begin to wonder in that moment in the year since then, how many of those people are sitting next to us on Sunday morning? How many of those people work right next door to us? How many of those people surround us for whom haven't felt the blessing of genuine affection in years? You know, who I've discovered needs hugs in our church? Who they need hugs frequently? Are our widows and our widowers in our church. They have a sacred, special place in my heart, the widows and widowers in my church. Because I want them to know that they are loved. Because I have walked with them, possibly through a very painful season. And I also know that they went from daily visible signs of affection to none, possibly. Right? They're special in our church. Just got to know that. Now, I am a mindful hugger, all right? I try to read body language that says, no thank you for that, right? Right? Usually it's the arm bar that gets me convinced, but, you know, I don't know if some of you don't know Angie. Angie plays at our 8:15 service. She plays the piano for our service. I think she weighs 65 pounds. I don't know. When I hug her every Sunday because she's precious. Her and Jean have been here the whole time I've been here, and she's played the whole time. And when I hug Angie very gently, right, because she's fragile, right? But I don't miss a chance to hug Angie. Now, there's some big guys in our church, Jeremy Salmon, Bill Kennedy. When we hug, that's a boatload of hugging going on right there now. That's a lot of tonnage all in one place expressing love, right? Right? It's a boatload of love. Listen, Listen, I know not everybody likes to be hugged. And again, I try to read body language. I've had some hugs go bad. All right? Just to be honest. Where you thought, mental note, shouldn't go there again, right? Right? So true story, just to be transparent, Dee Dee knows this story. And so I hugged a woman one Sunday, like from behind. I came up from behind her and put my arm around her, right? Thinking that it was Dee Dee. It was not Dee Dee. I swear to you, she had the same haircut, same body type. I would have bet good money that was my wife. That's my story and I'm sticking to it, all right? That's what I'm saying, right? Right? So, turns out, she turns around, she's a first-time visitor, right? Right? Just go ahead and tweet it, hashtag embarrassing. You know, she didn't ever come back. She didn't come back. Little, maybe too loving, maybe. I don't know, right? So we have a staff member who should remain nameless, who works for me, who hates to be hugged. She hates to be hugged. And so we love to watch people try to hug her, right? Because it's like, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, right? And so you see people coming in for the hug, and then like LeBron James at the rim, boom, rejection, baby, right? It's just like she hates to be hugged. So Nathan is constantly trying to get people to hug her. He goes, oh, she loves to be hugged. Go give her a big hug, right? Nathan stirs the pot, right? I have a couple of close friends, too, who are in the room today, who will also remain nameless, who hate to be hugged. These guys hate to be hugged. They're good friends. I've been my friends for a long, long time. I hug them anyway. I just want them to be uncomfortable, but they're my friends, right? So let me share another story about genuine affection. This one a little bit more touching. It's one I've told over time a couple of times. If you've heard it before, just bear with me again. It's touching, and I feel like it's fitting. When I first got into ministry, I was an associate pastor at SunTree, and I did a great deal of what Janice does for us now, which is congregational care and hospital visits and that kind of thing. The fact is Janice is infinitely far better at that than I ever was and ever am, and so even now, you know, if I show up at the hospital, people are worried that their family hasn't told them something like, they sent you, right? True story, about a year ago, that we had a guy in our church that had his knee replaced, and kind of an empathetic thing for me because I've now had both my knees replaced. So I told Janice, listen, I'll go visit this guy. Don't worry about that. I walk into the hospital room. The first thing he says to me is, where's Janice? Swiss cheese. That's all I am, Swiss cheese. Anyway, back in the day, that was my job. So I met an elderly couple in SunTree while we were members there. I had known them. And then when I got in, Jack and Emma were their names. And when I got into ministry, I began to get to know them better. They were lovely people. They never had children. Their whole life was each other and traveling. They loved to travel. Their friends, their church, that was their life. So during this season, while I'm the associate, Emma is diagnosed with mandibular cancer, jaw cancer. And I had the privilege of walking with them through that journey for about 2 years. Near the end of her life, she had all of her lower jaw removed and was on a feeding tube. She couldn't talk. All of her hair was gone. She had become incredibly frail, about 75, 80 pounds. I never visited Emma where Jack wasn't there, right? Didn't matter what time of day, afternoon, evening, Jack was always there. 60 years of marriage, anchored in unwavering commitment. So Jack calls me one day and said, Corky, I think today's the day. And I think if you're going to come say goodbye to Emma, today's the day to do that. And I certainly want to do that. So I dropped what I was doing and I left immediately for the hospice facility. Little did I know what was coming next. Little did I know that I would be gifted with the greatest example of visible affection that I have ever seen in my life to that day and beyond. I've never seen anything like it. So as I approached the room at the hospice facility, I could hear Jack talking to her. And so I paused outside the door for what was about 5 or 10 minutes, and I listened to him tell her how beautiful she was and how lovely she was. And he was recalling moments that they shared together, and I literally stood there with tears running down my face as I listened to him express his sincere, heartfelt affection of 60 years for this wife. And it struck me as he was telling her over and over again how beautiful she was, that by the world's standards, that was probably not the case. She was disfigured, and I'm not even gonna try to sugarcoat that. It was hard to look at, you know? And so it was a bad place, right? So as I regain my composure and I walk in the room, what I saw crushed me. Jack had crawled up into bed and was holding in his 87-year-old arms his wife. And he was stroking the side of her face and over again telling her how beautiful she was, with her just looking up at him. So I sat there for a couple hours, and I got to watch as she went to heaven with the last thing she heard before she left this earth was how beautiful she was. Church, this is visible affection. I share that story with young couples I do premarital counseling with because it's important for them to know that the love they know when they're 24 looks very different than when they're 87. And their goal is to have that kind of love at 87. Again, church, we live in the shadow of the cross, and because we are the very recipients of such sacrificial love and grace, visible affection should be our testimony. True beauty is defined by God, and then he gives us eyes to recognize it. You may not know this, but it was the practice of the early church to greet each other with a holy kiss. What made this practical in the first century under intense persecution of Christians is that everyone who greeted you with a holy kiss, you could trust them. You knew they were part of the church family. You knew that they were not going to harm you. It was a safe place. They were safe. Now, before some of you start freaking out that I'm about to institute this holy smooching to happen every Sunday, you know, I want us to understand the importance of visible affection to the early church as they were doing life together. So Paul makes references to this holy kiss in four places, in the book of Romans, in 1st and 2nd Corinthians, as well as the book of Thessalonians. And then Peter says in 1 Peter 5 that we should greet one another with a kiss of love. I believe what Paul and Peter are suggesting is to take the physical, familiar expression of endearment and use it in a way that is holy to express our love for one another. Now, because of what our culture has done, I think we have to be careful in a way that first century Christians did not have to be careful, right? I mean, we just need to be cautious. We need to be careful. We know that's not always welcome. And we know that there is a trust that needs to be built. But listen, you just need to hear this from me. There are a handful of men in my life, it just happened in the hallway just a few minutes ago, that greet me with a kiss on the cheek. Manly men, godly men, who are endearing to me. And this expression is a way of saying to me, listen, you matter, you're precious to me. Your friendship is the world to me. And our affection is bound with this mutual love of Christ. I love the fact that they are neither ashamed or embarrassed or worried about their manhood, that they can kiss me, their friend, on the cheek. Our affection for one another is visible, and we all like mushroom quiche. And so I'm just kind of throwing that in, right? Again, because something as beautiful as a kiss has been hijacked by our hypersexualized culture and world, the church ends up losing out on this sign of affection. The key is to recapture this expression of faith. And then when we greet one another, we would take someone's hand, or we would fist bump them, or we would hug them, or we would maybe just look them in their face and smile, right? I mean, maybe that's all it takes. Something that expresses affection that we should all be feeling in our hearts for one another anyway, right? Let me give you another example, all right? All of us know how to raise our hands. Let me show you that we do. Raise your hand, right? Look, we can all do that. Now do the other hand, right? It's amazing, right? We all know how to raise our hands. We raise them at sporting events and at concerts and when we're frisked at the airport. Okay, maybe that just happens to me, but I get frisked at the airport a lot. The point I'm trying to make is this, is that in 1 Timothy, Paul tells worshipers they should pray lifting holy hands. Something we all know how to do. A normal, secular activity. Lifting our hands. Paul tells Timothy, we should pray lifting holy hands. So what makes it holy? The object of our adoration makes it holy. Jesus makes sacred the raising of hands, the kissing of a cheek, the shaking of a hand, the fist bump. What makes it sacred is who is receiving it. Again. We have been commanded to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, and all our mind, and to love our neighbor as ourself. We are vertical recipients and horizontal dispensers of love. The bottom line is affection should be visible. People should know. Church, I believe we live in a hostile world. The church is beleaguered by culture, persecuted by haters, and doing life together as the body of Christ should remind us that we are safe and secure with one another. That among the body we can place is a place to show sacrificial, earnest, heartfelt affection for one another, simply because we are united by the same kind of love that comes from Christ. I think being a Christian means finding those things or people that stir our affections for Christ and to saturate our life with them. We should find those things that rob us of our affection, and we should run away from them as fast as we can. I have always figured that if God loved them enough to send his one and only son for them, then there's a very good chance he expects me to love them too. Whoever them are, you know, those people, those homeless people we don't want to shake their hand because we don't know where their hand has been. Those people, them people, if God loved them enough to send his son, then there's a pretty good chance he expects us to love them too. In the Old Testament book of Ruth, we see one of the greatest statements of affection. Naomi has lost her husband and she has lost both her sons, and she is floundering with these two daughter-in-laws who are not Jewish as she was, but were Moabites. And so Naomi encourages them to return. He said, listen, girls, just return to your people, go back home. And then Ruth makes this statement to her mother-in-law. She says this, don't urge me to leave you or turn my back from you. Where you will go, I will go. Where you will stay, I will stay. And your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. And where you die, I will die there and will be buried. And may the Lord deal with me ever so severely if anything separates us. This is life together. This is the spirit we want in our church. A place where we go everywhere together, where nothing can separate us. A place where we can share our friends so our God can be their God. A place where everyone is welcome. A place where everything is shared, our ups, our downs. A place where we can laugh together, share life's joys. It just seems natural to me if in that kind of place that affection would be visible. I read an article recently that said there are 80 million Americans say they have zero, not a goose egg, none at all friends. 80 million Americans claim they have no friends. Crazy, isn't it? We are the most connected people in history, and yet may be lonelier than ever. Even as most of us are engaging in far more online activity than ever before, simultaneously, many of us are experiencing less and less personal intimacy. And this is hitting us in ways that we are not measuring really well. Suicide rates among young people, 15 to 25, are on the rise. They are the first generation to be completely immersed in smartphone technology that promotes and celebrates seclusion, and they've been doing it since the age of 5. More young people die annually from suicide than from cancer and heart disease and AIDS and birth defects and influenza and chronic lung disease combined. You don't think some of these young people need a hug? Dee Dee and I go down to youth periodically. We don't go every Sunday. We try to catch two or three Sundays a month. We go down there to help support Daisy and Nathan. And just we've got great young people in our church. And it's not that the kids don't have great pastors. They've got great pastors. They've got great support. But I want them to know that the head hog at the trough, the lead shepherd in this church, loves them and believes in them and makes avenues for them to sing because we believe in them. That's why we go. Just so they know that we have their back, right? Because everybody needs a hug, right? We were designed to connect and interact with one another, and technology has driven a big honking wedge between people, all the while claiming to connect them. Here's what I know. Your cell phone can do a lot of things. It cannot hug you. It cannot love you. And you can talk Siri into telling you that it loves you. But somehow, I don't think she can back it up. Listen, I think there are three types of poverty in this world: material poverty, spiritual poverty, relational poverty. Material poverty, the lack of basic needs. Spiritual poverty, the lack of eternal significance. Relational poverty, the lack of intimate friendships. Unless I'm mistaken, the church is the only institution in the world specifically designed to prevent all of these impoverished states from ever happening. Jesus comes to ensure that our daily needs are met, that our eternity is secure, and that we would realize that no one ever, ever walks alone. It's why God so loved the world that he sent his son so none would perish. All right, scripture's getting the last word. Luis, you guys can come. I know I'm running long. Be nice to the parking ministry. Just say, it's Corky's fault. I can't get fired till May. It's really job security. So, all right, let me just share with you a couple of statements. First is a parable by Jesus, and the second statement is a spiritual practical statement from James. Matthew in chapter 7 says this, "Therefore, anyone who hears these words of mine, the words of Jesus, and puts them into practice, is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house, and yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell. It fell with a mighty crash," Jesus says, right? So I asked you this morning, are we putting into practice the words of Christ when he says that we are to love one another as he loved us? You see, for Jesus, it was never optional for him. And then in the book of James, the half-brother of Christ, it's interesting to me always that James didn't believe Jesus was the Messiah until Jesus rose from the dead, right? Just tells you what family can do for you, right? I mean, it just messes with you, right? So in James 1, he says this, he says, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says," James says. "Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and then after looking at itself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do." God created you to be a blessing. Love without action is never love in the first place. It's just talk, and talk is cheap until it's backed up. Visible affection is love in action. It's the opportunities that abound everywhere, every day in front of us. I just asked you this morning, do the people that you say you love actually feel your love? Here's what I know, church, here's what I know. These opportunities abound. And I just pray God finds us reaching out with affection, so that everyone we encounter knows they're loved. Because you never know when you're standing in front of somebody who could just use a dose of affection, right? Who just might need a hug. And all of God's children said,